Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real.
Thanks to Laura Fox for her after entertainment this afternoon. It's Tuesday the 1st of February, which means it's the first day of spring, even though that's probably debatable. But you're definitely listening to Game On. Coming up today, Tom Brady confirms his retirement with what some people have viewed as a very pointed statement.
He goes on in that statement to thank his Bucks teammates, his Bucks fans, the city of Tampa, the Glazer family, of course, the owner of the Bucks, as well as his head coach of the Bucks, his Bucks coaches. He does not mention anywhere in that statement that other team he played for, the New England Patriots. That is a clearly deliberate omission.
Speaking of goats, Johnny Sexton starts our build-up to Ireland versus Wales as a mouth-watering Six Nations awaits.
You know, a lot of teams from last year's Six Nations will maybe feel like, you know, they could have done a little bit better. You know, Wales obviously, having won it, probably felt they should have won a Grand Slam. But then there's a few other teams in there going, well, if we had started the tournament a bit better, you know, and I think there's a lot of teams in that boat. So I think when you put it like that, I think teams would be coming in with big aspirations.
Plus, we have another chance for you to win our Six Nations trips to Paris. We've Lucy Mulhall in Rugby Sevens, Paul Nicholas and Rachel Blackmore in the Dublin Racing Festival, and Mark Langdon on an intriguing transfer deadline day. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Well, Ruby.
I can't believe I stuttered over Paul Nicholas' name. I only worked for the man for 10 years, like. Imagine that, like.
Hope he wasn't listening.
No, so do I.
Be embarrassing later. So news today, Ruby, that Pádraig Maher announced his retirement from hurling due to medical advice. I think it has sent shockwaves around the sporting world, well, the GAA world anyway. He had been in front of the media and was on this show only a week or so ago talking about his desire and his hunger to come back and how he was doing everything that he can. But unfortunately for Paddy, who turns 33 next week, he will not be able to play on from medical. He got some medical advice regarding a neck injury and he has to hang up his boots. Pretty heartbreaking decision for him, just given how much he loved the game, how much he wanted to give everything that he had. He felt like he had more to give, and now he can't play for county or club.
It's not a heartbreaking decision. It's just heartbreaking because there is no decision. There's no choice in the matter when you're advised medically to not be involved in any contact sport. There's no decision to be made there. And that's probably what's heartbreaking about that. There's no choice in this for Pádraig Maher. I mean, he's, what, won 7 Tipperary titles with Thurles Sarsfields, 1 Munster titles, 5 Munster titles with Tipperary, 3 All-Ireland, 6 All-Stars. And when we spoke to him a couple of weeks ago here on Game On, he could feel the enthusiasm in his voice to play again. And under new management, obviously, this year in Tipperary, and he was looking forward to that. And that's the heartbreaking bit for him. It's not a choice he made. It was a decision that's been forced upon him. Not a decision, it's a consequence that's been forced upon him. And it'll be hard for him. It's tough for... I was lucky when I retired from the profession I had in that I made a choice. It wasn't forced upon me and it was easier to deal with it. But it will be difficult for Paddy to have to turn his back on hurling. That will be a big change in his life.
The GAA is so different to other sports from the view of what you do when you finish up. So, like, you retire from racing and, okay, you're riding out for Willie, but you're finished competing. Often soccer players, they retire. Rugby players, Dunica retired. I often asked him, why didn't you go back and play for Conn? Once they're gone, it seems they're gone. But in the GAA, you always go back to your club because that's where it starts. And you end up moving down the ranks and you end up playing
junior A,
junior B, junior D for some, and can keep playing well into your 40s if you want. So that, as you said, that choice is there, or for most people it's there anyway. Unfortunately for Paddy, it isn't there. But that is always that blanket is almost, if you like, there when players do retire for inter-county, that they just go back to where they came from. And they have that group, the community, the dressing room, all the things that they love about the GAA, that they love about the game is there in the same way. The level is a little bit different, but playing for your club, for a lot of people, is almost bigger than playing for your county, and you still have that. So for him, I think that hurts a huge amount as well.
I suppose the only option for him, and there's, of course, there's always options, it is coaching, management, mm-hmm. is to be still involved with his club and maybe with his county, with all he's achieved and with his brain for hurling and experience that he has. I doubt very much people are going to let that go to waste. So, you know, it'll be a different career for him, but you just, look, I hope he gets his teeth stuck into something and be it coaching or managing or something and find something to fill the time sooner rather than later.
One of the things that I love about him is that he fulfilled his potential. So often, as you know, and as the listeners will know, that when you hear a young lads when they're 17 or 18 and, you know, they're touted as being the next best thing and being the next best thing and everyone thinks they're great and there's all this pressure and expectation put on them. And he was one of these people. 2006 minor final, he holds Joe Canning's scoreless from play. Few years later then, he out-hurls Henry Shefflin and he's only just a teenager. But yet he goes on to do amazing things and has this longevity all and consistency up until his early 30s. And that's not an easy thing to do, to carry that expectation in a county like Tipperary and go on then and fulfil his potential. It's pretty remarkable, really, as well.
It is remarkable, but I suppose that will be the some bit of solace for him to look back on. He's not going to look back with regrets. The only probably regret he has is one that he had nothing to do with and that he didn't finish his hurling career maybe the way he wanted to. But he's not going to have any regrets about how he conducted himself as a hurler. And I suppose that's about the biggest compliment we can pay him, Marie.
Yeah, and an absolute warrior. And that's, I think, why people took to him so much, because there's actually a great picture going around of him. He's going to block a ball and he doesn't have a hurley in his hand. And he just has the two hands up in the air like a Gaelic footballer about to block a football. But he's thrown himself in front of man, stick and slitter and doesn't care what the consequences are. He's just going for it. And that just epitomises everything about him. Great interviewer as well. And I'm just thinking back to when we had him on a couple of weeks ago when we were slagging about people asking him, was he going to retire because of the age that he was, you know, and he was slagging back about the fact that ever since he turned 30, like every interview that he's had, he's been asked about it. But unfortunately, we won't be asking him about it again, because that is it for him. But what a servant he's been, and fair play. And as you said, we'll be looking forward to seeing what he does next. A very different retirement to the one that we are going to talk to Jeff Shepherd about. Shep is joining us all the way from the USA to talk about the infamous Tom Brady. It's been a bit of a saga, and we have been talking about sagas quite a lot, but this Tom Brady announcement turned into one over the weekend when it was reported that he was going to retire. Then his dad came out and said, well, he hadn't made up his mind and made his decision. Well, now, Shep, he has announced that he is officially done with the NFL.
Yeah, that's right, Marie. After 22 years, he has officially decided to hang them up, and he said it kind of came down to not being able to make that 100% competitive commitment that it takes to...
We have lost Shep. We will get him back up in a minute. But he was actually just started about talking about Tom Brady's statement there, Ruby. And I wanted to talk to you about it anyway. The fact that he said he couldn't make that 100% competitive commitment, which is quite interesting when you're 44 and have been playing for 22 seasons and been so successful and so consistent for so long, that it is the reason that he's giving it up, that he feels he can't get that competitiveness out of him. And I was a little bit surprised by that. I just thought he'd say, look, you know, I've had enough now.
Yeah, but if he couldn't be 100% committed to it, look, I don't know Tom Brady, so who am I to second guess him?
Well, if anybody was going to know him in this country, it would be you, by the way.
Yeah, I doubt that. And I don't know very much about the NFL either, but I imagine most sports are the same. And the 100% commitment is probably motivation, Marie. And when you've achieved as much as Tom Brady has and have repeated basically the same thing every day of his life for the last 22 years, that's probably why he can't get up to that. It just in the end becomes that little bit tiresome, and he knows that if he's not 100%, what's he going to do? Only damage the own incredible brand he's built.
So look, it's probably uncomfortable for you from when I say this, but look, when you compare sports and where he's at his career and where you're at in your career when you retired, like it is quite similar. He still is at the top of his game. Okay, he's not going to win the Super Bowl, but he's still competing at the very top level and has shown that he still has something unbelievable to offer. So you as well went out at the top, but I'm sure many people questioned, would you not have kept going? You still got it and all the rest. Does that make it, is that what it comes down to, that you are, when you're somebody like you and somebody like him and you're so used to having the success and knowing that you're not going to hang on to it or you're not going to be able to physically keep doing what you were doing, is that what it is, that you know you're going to slip a little bit, so you want to go?
Well, you have it to the outside world, but you know yourself that you're barely hanging in there. What was simple is now very difficult, and the effort required to sustain that. And I knew I was on the way out, and that's why I'm not talking for Tom Brady, because I don't know how he felt. But I knew what I could do at 25. I found harder at 35, found harder at 37, and it was just going one way. And I always remember asking AP when he announced his retirement. I was looking at him thinking, what are you at? He was like prime of his fitness, as riding the same way as he had been, but it was just his body was slowing down and the effort required. And I couldn't get my head around it till I was 40. And then I knew exactly what AP had done 5 years earlier. And I know Tom Brady is 44, but it's your body, you cannot slow aging down, and it happens to everybody. And that's what happened to me. And I have a funny feeling, Tom Brady probably won't admit to that, but it is. It's your body slowing down, and the effort required to be 100% committed to it is just too much.
To be fair to him, he has eked every single last bit out of himself, and he's done everything that he possibly could to sustain his career, from diet to the different trainings he was doing to the psychological side of it, like absolutely everything. He's a bit like Ronaldo in that sense, you know, sleeping in the right temperature, having a special type of bed, you know, like everything from a sports science point of view, he's done it. But he's also shown that you can do it.
Well, you can. And I'd say when you were as good as Tom Brady, you want to be at that level. It's not like we just spoke about the GAA and dropping back into the club and coming down from county level to the club to junior A all the way to junior B. That's not going to be Tom Brady. And that's why he's walking out at the top. He could drop down three levels and still be incredible, but he doesn't want to do that.
No, as you said, there's the brand there as well that needs to be protected. I'm sure there'll be lots of things that he's going to be selling over the next while. Okay, Ruby, let us take a very quick break and then we're back, I think, with racing.
Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm, being flat to the mat isn't real. Our protein is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On, and as we did last night, we're going all romantic this week as we show you some love and give you the chance to win an unbelievable prize thanks to Aldi. We want to send you to the most romantic city in the world, Paris, where you'll get to express your affection for your one true love, the Irish rugby team. You could be there to see them take on France in the Guinness Six Nations at the Stade de France on Saturday the 12th of February.
I love the way you're getting all the lines about romance. I'm quite enjoying that.
It's coming to Valentine's, you know. I'm kind of hoping if I, you know, keep going Aldi, the roses might land here and I won't have to buy them for Gillian.
Well, I was thinking you're up to something, all right. Okay, so that is it. We are thanking Aldi for that, because they have given us return flights, a 3-night hotel stay and tickets to the big game. It doesn't get better than that when it comes to prizes. And it's all to celebrate all Aldi's 149 stores having everything you need for Valentine's. From that perfect romantic home-cooked meal to cute cards, fabulous flowers and much, much more, Ruby.
And much more. So here's how you could be given a chance to win this amazing prize. Have a listen to this clip and answer the following question.
Presented for Stringer, O'Gara, crossfield kick, Shane Horgan's in position. Oh yes! What a try! Executed magnificently. That is as good a try as you will see all year.
Absolutely, and England absolutely rattled. But what a score, and really nothing more than they deserve. A beautiful ball, and appropriate that the score might come from a field like that in the place we are.
That was Shane Horgan scoring for Ireland against England in the Six Nations in 2007. I'm going to change the question. How many steps did he take after? No, honestly. But can you tell me which Irish stadium that try was scored in?
So please text your answer and name to 51552 and we'll pick one correct answer randomly each day, and that person will get themselves a €50 Aldi gift card and a place in Friday's draw for the trip to Paris. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. C2FM.ie. Over 18s only, and you've got to be able to travel on the 11th of February. Good luck, everyone. I enjoyed that. Paul Nicholls is on the line. I hope he enjoyed Ruby talking romance.
I doubt he did very much enjoy me talking romance. It's the only thing he wants to talk about now is fraud down on grenadine. Paul Nicholls, how are you?
I'm good. You must be getting soft in your old age.
I'm gone, Trish. I stuttered over your name in the intro and everything. I'm gone at this game. I was gone at the last game I was at, and I'm gone at this one already. Paul, you're bringing a couple of horses to the Dublin Racing Festival at the weekend, which is a big plus for Leopardstown, for Irish racing, to have English challengers coming here. And look, it's a place that's been lucky for you in the past. Has it been your plan pretty much all season with Fraud on? Was Grenadine, when did it come into the fray with him?
Definitely Fraud on, because you're not going to go to Cheltenham, and I just thought it's a valuable race. The grain's always good at Leopardstown, that would suit him. Very much the same with Grenadine, you know, it's a valuable prize. I think the track and the ground will suit him. There's not much else in this country. I don't want to take just giving them on it. Ask it the other day. So, yeah, it's been the plan, really.
Fraud on, obviously, you brought him to Down Royal for his first start this season, so you have no worries with him travelling. Right-handed, left-handed doesn't affect him. Do you think Leopardstown will play to his strengths?
I think so, Ruby. It's a big galloping track. As you said, he's won, you know, left-handed, right-handed. I've always thought he was slightly better left-handed. And the ground should suit him really as well. You know, if he brings his A game like he had at Down Royal, he should go well.
Obviously, Grenadine won the Tingle Creek back in December. Them is maybe slightly under par at Christmas behind Shishkin, but what sort of form is he in?
He's in very good form. He's had a nice break. I think we ran him a bit quick after, you know, preparing him, you know, the form of his life at the Tingle Creek. He wouldn't have beaten Shishkin that day, whatever we'd done, but it was just, you know, he ran well. I think he's had a break now, and he's back in where he wants to be, and he scored this morning, was mad fresh, and yeah, very happy with him.
Leopardstown, I suppose, Paul, has always been a lucky place for you. You rode the winner of the Irish Gold Cup back in 88 even.
Yeah, it was at Old School Play School. That was a great day, and then I think 21 years after that, took the same trophy home for Mr. Hales with Neptune Cologne. So, yeah, it's been good for us in Denman. I think won there with you in Tidal Bay. So, yeah, I'd love having runners at Leopardstown.
You've never been afraid to bring horses to Ireland. I mean, you've had 28 winners from 89 runners on this side of the Irish Sea. I mean, that's a phenomenal strike rate. What draws you to Ireland? Prize money, programming?
Yeah, it's the prize money for those better races, Ruby, and having the right horse, you know, for the right race. You look back at Tidal Bay. I mean, Tidal Bay was never going to run well in a Gold Cup or even a King George, and it just, we always felt that that track suited him. And, yeah, I've thought that, you know, the horses we ran last year, Clan Desabo, obviously when he won the Punches and Gold, he didn't go to Cheltenham, doesn't suit him. So you just got to run the, you know, right horses in the right day at the right time. You know, they're good enough for, you know, some of those classier ones, masterminded one, as you know, back along. You know, they're good horses, and you wouldn't just bring anything over. It's got to be the right horses that can challenge and be competitive.
And you haven't, it's not just how big Grade 1 meetings you've come to. I mean, you've come to Galway and won a Galway Plate. You've been to Limerick and won a Munster National. You're not afraid to come here and beat the Irish in their backyard.
No, I think a lot of that was your idea as well. You know, like we always sort of worked together, you would always say you had an idea. And yeah, I mean, you know, those are good races to win. I mean, the Galway Plate with Oslot was a great day, and we'd sort of had that plan from when he won at Newton Abbot and just ended up well handicapped. But yeah, I really enjoyed coming to Ireland. You know, we always made very welcome. The owners get really, really well looked after. Like Mr. Vogue was saying in the Racing Post today, how he's made so welcome at Down Royal. It makes them, you know, enjoy it, and they like to go. And people like Jed Mason love going over there. Mr. Barber, you know, they could have runners, they'd be there. And I know this year, if Clan gets the punches, then they'll all be over.
Big crew coming with you. Obviously, Paul, that is Ireland this weekend. Brave Man's Game would look like your next up-and-coming star chaser. Is he billed for Newbury the following weekend?
Yeah, he is. I'm going to actually put him in the Denman Chase and the Novice Chase. Depend what Clan does. If Clan runs in the Denman Chase, we'll run him in the Novice Chase. I just want to get one run into him. We always used to, as you know, use Newbury as a stepping stone for Cheltenham. Always worked very well. I think it's good time in their preparation. So, yeah, he's in good shape and ready to go.
That's great to hear, Paul. Thanks a million for taking our call. We won't delay you any longer. Will we see you in Leopardstown at the weekend, or are you staying at home?
I'm probably going to go to Sandown, and I might go and watch Olive Ryden at Larkhill on Sunday. The owners of Greenwich Dream can't go on Sunday, so I'll probably send Harry over, and he'll look after everything.
We look after Harry as well. Paul, thanks a million, and the best of luck this weekend.
Yeah, thank you, Ruby.
Now, big weekend, Ruby.
Yeah, Paul is going to watch his daughter, Olive, actually, who's just started riding the point to point. She's 16, maybe 17, so he's going to Larkhill to watch her on Sunday, as he just informed us, in case you're wondering who Olive was. That is Olive Nichols. Yeah, but it is a big weekend, Rachel. We have clips from Rachel Blackmore as well. Sorry, Marie.
Don't mind me call Rachel. That's yeah, good. Rachel Blackmore, one of the greatest. Happy days.
I wonder what she'll say when I call her Marie. I'm sure she'd be just as chuffed.
I'd say not somehow.
We'll see, but it is. Look, and I suppose this morning when you had confirmations for entries, Marie, obviously the entries are made sort of 3 weeks ago for racing like this, and then there's confirmations 5 days out, and some of the fields cut up kind of small, but you do have competitive fields. I mean, you look at the first Natalian Lacey Solicitors Novices Hurdle, there's only 10 left in it, but 6 of those horses could win the race. The same with the Juvenile Hurdle next. There's only 9 in it, but 4 of them are really classy horses. So whilst it might be small numerically, there's a lot of strength and depth in these races, and it'll be a wonderful weekend's racing.
There's a huge amount of interest in it. So let's take it day by day and start off with Saturday. And we may as well start with the big one and the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup.
Yeah, look, and we just spoke to Paul. He's very happy with Frodon, and it's a kind of race that really could suit a horse like Frodon. He's a front runner. Leopardstown's chase track suits horses that race close to the pace, even though it's quite stiff. And it's the back straight, 6 fences in a line. And if you're riding a front runner that jumps, you can put a lot of horses under pressure behind you. The whole challenge will probably be led by Manila Indo. I think Rachel Blackmore rides him, I'm assuming she does. Last year's Gold Cup winner. He was disappointed in the King George at Christmas. He was 4th in this race last year, en route to winning the Cheltenham Gold Cup. But look, he's a high class horse. And obviously, Willie Mullins has Jana Dill, Silas Emery, Asterion Falange, and last year's winners, Kemp Boy, so plenty of strength and depth in here. And Gordon Elliott also has the filly Mount Ida, so I can't remember a mare winning the race before, but mares have become so much more prominent and almost dominant in racing in recent times that it's not even a matter of time before one does.
Why is that the case, that they have become more dominant in recent times?
Change to the programme. Breeders and the racing authorities have put on more races confined to mares to strengthen, give them more chances to strengthen the breed, and to make race mares more valuable. And it's worked. I mean, you look at the great mares we've had in recent times. You go back and talk about Dawn Run in the 80s, but there were few and far between. We've had a lot of good mares in the last 10 to 15 years, and that's because of the programme that the Irish Racing have put on for them.
Equality.
Yeah, exactly. Even in equine terms, maybe. And again, an allowance.
It's all wins, we'll take them. The Arkle then, Ruby, there's no Fernie Hollow, but Blue Lord will be running?
Yeah, he will. Obviously, Fernie Hollow's absence is a blow, especially a blow for Willie Mullins. He obviously beat Riviera Detel at Christmas, and she gave him a good race, Marie, Gordon Elliott's filly, and she has Blue Lord, Hawthorne Couleur and St. Sam to face on Saturday, so it looks pretty much 3 of Willie Mullins' versus 1 of Gordon Elliott's. So there's a few more in there, but Embittered, Embrun, Mijita and Busselton would have to improve. But Riviera Detel is no back number, and she's plenty of experience.
Then we have the Nathaniel Lacey Partners Solicitors Novice Hurdle you mentioned a little bit earlier on, and Hollow Gains, the one to watch.
Ah, definitely. Great run behind Ginto at Nace, where he finished 3rd. You obviously have Grand Jury as well, who was 2nd on his last start. Eric Bloodaxe was a good winner at Limerick over Christmas. Willie Mullins will have Braun, Manila, Cocooner, and What Do You Want, who is a bit disappointing at Nace in the Lawler's Hotel. So he has to bounce back from that. And Gordon Elliott also has Manila Crooner. So if you are having a bet, be careful there. Manila Cocooner and Manila Crooner are in the one race.
I'm going to ask a question now, and it's probably a silly one. Where has the Manila come from?
Hotel Manila, John Nallan in Clonmel, Manila Times, Manila Indo, Manila Cocooner, Manila Crooner.
So they call them all after Manila?
He calls them, always had, Manila Man, Manila Lad, Hotel Manila, Clonmel Manila. There's been plenty of them, but that's where they all come from. He's an unbelievable man. But he buys foals and yearlings and brings them along, produces them to run in point to points, and they're all named Manila.
Right, that's probably a good way to keep a handle on them and know who owns
them. It's good brand advertisement,
yeah,
I would have said.
Big time. Registered with me anyway. So then the spring juvenile hurdle is on Saturday as well, Ruby.
Yeah, look, Gordon Elliott looks to hold the aces with the juveniles, Marie. He had Pied Piper last Saturday in Cheltenham, who was outstanding under Davy Russell. And he'll have Field Orr here as well, who's been very good in his three starts in Ireland at Down Royal Ferry House in Nepperstown. He'll have Vauban of Willies, who was second to Pied Piper in Punchestown, to take on an Icare Allen, who won at Leopardstown over Christmas, as well as Noah Mead's Ben Siegel. You know, but Field Orr does set the standard here, and he'll be hard to beat if he turns up.
Anything worth watching out for on the handicaps?
I think Panda Boy of Martin Brazzles in the Paddy Power I'd Love a Can handicap hurdle at 2.45 was a good winner on his last start and seems to be going forward in the right direction for Martin Brazzle, who won last week's Goff's Tieste's Chase. And in the handicap chase, the second last race, I thought Mount Leinster could be interesting for Willie Mullins, and I'd be giving my dad's Baccio a cheer as well there.
Pretty good. I'll be taking note of that. So let's move on to Sunday. Honeysuckle, as we know, is the standout horse for the Grade 1 Chanel Pharma Irish Champion Hurdle on day 2 of the Dublin Racing Festival. Rachel Blackmore can't speak highly enough of this incredibly tough mare. Let's hear from her.
Every jockey's dream is to be associated with something like this in their career, and you know, I'm very lucky that I'm part of her now. She's just above and beyond anything else, I think. She's just got a massive will to win. She's dug deep a few times when she's really, really had to, and yeah, she's just incredible, and you know, Henry does a fantastic job with her. She seems to be very versatile in a lot of different areas. To be able to adapt like she does to different situations and different races, different tactics, you know, she's an absolute dream to ride as a jockey.
Does she have challengers on Sunday, Ruby?
She only will if Appreciated runs. He hasn't run since he won the Supreme Novices Hurdle at Cheltenham last season. He worked this morning and worked quite well, Marie, but she has race fitness as an edge over him anyway, as well as probably just being better and getting her £7 mare's allowance. So it'll be a big ask for Appreciated, but outside of him, St. Roy's, Anna here, Echoes and Rain, Heaven Help Us, she's beaten them all before, and she hasn't just beaten them, she's absolutely trounced them. So look, she sets an unbelievable standard. She's an incredible race mare, and I look, even though this is not going to be the toughest race she's ever going to face, she's starting to build that following that she almost draws a crowd herself. I know, like, my kids are at me since she ran in Fairy House, when is Honeysuckle running again? Can we go and see Honeysuckle? All they want to do is watch Rachel Blackmore and Honeysuckle, and I think that's great for racing. So look, she's an outstanding mare, and it's how far she wins, I'd say.
Okay. So also on Sunday, pretty packed card, the Ladbrokes Novice Chase is another one that would be worth checking out.
Definitely, and I think Galloping the Champ has, I think, been on most people's radars since Leopardstown at Christmas, when he put in a sparkling display to win his beginner's chase. Now, this is a huge step up in class. He'll obviously have Beacon Edge, Capodanno, French Dynamite, Fury Road, Jungle Boogie, Master McShee and Run Wild Fred as opposition on Sunday. Now, Master McShee will be the fairy tale story for Paddy Corkery. Only trains 3 or 4 horses, I think, in Cork, and Master McShee won the Grade 1 in Limerick at Christmas, but Galloping the Champ was breathtaking, I thought, at Christmas, and he, I think, is one to go and enjoy.
Is Shaqan Persuad the one to look for in the Ladbrokes Dublin chase? I know the one that always stands out for me is Sam Crowe, and you slagged me about that.
Yeah, poor old Sam Crowe is just sort of on the decline. I actually had the privilege of riding Shaqan Persuad this morning, and he's in really good form, but he was disappointing in the Tingle Creek. Grenadine beat him fair and square. I guess it's in Shaqan's backyard this time, and Grenadine has to do the travelling, but yeah, look, we're hoping Shaqan can bounce back to his best, but I was happy with him this morning, and Cashback does look to be in good order too. He could be a price each way there.
What about Sir Gerhard for the Novice Hurdle?
Yeah, he was brilliant at Christmas. I think he's a very, very good horse, but this is a much better race. Tree Stripe Life, My Mate Mozzie, Mighty Potter and El Fabiolo represent a different level of form to what he had to do at Christmas. He obviously won last year's Cheltenham Bumper when he beat Kilcrut. I love what he does. He's a wonderful jumper. He's lots of speed. And if he can go and win on Sunday, I think he could even displace Constitution Hill as favourite for the Supreme on the opening day of the Cheltenham Festival. I think he's a hell of a good racehorse.
So, Ruby, anything else before we finish up?
Anything else before we finish up? I thought Facile Vega would win the bumper on Saturday, and I think Pink in the Park will probably win the bumper on Sunday. Manila Times is in a handicap hurdle as well. Last year's Grand National winner is in the Leopardstown Chase even on Sunday afternoon. And outside of that, there's a pretty competitive handicap hurdle that I didn't really fancy too much, and to tell you the truth, but I just think it's a wonderful weekend's race, and I can't wait. I'll be there both days. Obviously, I would prefer if the rugby was at 5 o'clock and we could watch it all, but, you know, these sporting authorities just don't seem to come.
It's hard to please everyone, though.
I know.
Right, let's take a very quick break, and then we're back with Sevens Rugby and Lucy Mulhall.
Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm, rise and grind and the hustle mindset aren't real. The protein in our chicken and turkey is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe, and Ruby Walsh. It is Tuesday and we are getting through all of the sports stories of the day. We're also starting our build-up to the Six Nations. A little bit earlier, Johnny Sexton faced the media. He said that complacency will not be an issue for Ireland in this Saturday's Six Nations opener against Wales. He said that there is plenty of freshness in the squad.
Look, I said this last week at the captain's launch, we're in a very similar position to we were in November. We, you know, not a hell of a lot of game time in most of the lads, with COVID games being called off, guys having coming back from sickness themselves or injuries. So, but it was the same coming into November. Some Lions guys had played one game or not even a game, and we hit the ground running. So, it's not an excuse or it's not something that we spoke about. When you come in the door of Irish camp, you're expected to hit certain standards, and the guys that are doing it in training day in, day out will be the guys that are picked for the weekend, and the guys that don't won't, and that's it really in a nutshell. It's not something we think about, but you know, the proof will be in the pudding on Saturday. Like, you know, if we come and put in a good performance and we win, well then we can say, no, we were fresh and we were good to go. If we go out and don't play well and lose, well then we can, you know, people might be saying, oh, they were undercooked. So you'd be judged by your result in your performance, but there's no excuses internally.
No excuses internally for Johnny Sexton and co. Heading into the Wales game, Ruby, as he said there, that they do have plenty of freshness. They haven't played a huge amount. Questionable whether that's all a good thing or a bad thing. Wales do seem to be in a much worse position when it comes to injuries and just a general setup over there. But still, you know, opening games, game of a Six Nations, it doesn't matter who you're playing, it's always a tough task.
Yeah, it is, but the provinces seem to be flying, and even if, yeah, they might prefer some more game time, they're fresh and hungry and eager, and there just seems to be a magnificent squad of players there, even the competition for places. And, like, I know you can talk it up, Marie, but if we're being really honest, like, we'd be disappointed if they don't beat Wales, won't we?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah,
we always build it up anyway. This week is simple
as that. Like, that's what we. And I think that's great that we expect heading into the Six Nations that, yeah, we're going to beat Wales, that we are title contenders, and that pressure is on them. I think that's wonderful. It's much worse than I hated being the underdog. No one expected to win. Yeah, hate being the underdog.
Why?
Because if you're the underdog, no one thinks you can win, and you're probably not going to win. So at least if you go in as hot favourite, well, if you do it right, there's a good chance you'll win.
Were you the underdog often?
Me? I'm sure I was, plenty. Every horse race was different, but I much preferred. The horses, the price couldn't be short enough for Marie, because the shorter it was, the better chance it had of winning. And that's the way I think it's great that the rugby team is looked upon as favourites, and yeah, we expect them to win.
It's nearly the opposite of the Irish mentality, you know, that we seem to really thrive when we're the underdog, when people don't expect us to win, that's when we can dig deep and get these performances. But like, it's rare enough now that somebody in this country would say that they're not thriving being the underdog.
But you should be the opposite. You shouldn't have to have people thinking you can't to make you do. You should be thinking, I can do it and I will do it. That was my mentality. I only perform because everyone told me I couldn't. Sure, that's only proving people wrong. You should be out there proving them right.
Well, that's probably why people associated you with winning so often then as well, because that was your mentality. Like people would always say, you know, Ruby Walsh, winner. God, I'm giving you all these compliments today.
Yeah, what's going on?
I don't know. Okay, well, if anybody wants Ruby to do motivational talks, he'd probably be pretty good at it. Okay, now let us join Lucy Mulhall. Lucy, I don't know if you caught our conversation there. So Lucy is the Ireland Sevens captain. And is it fair enough to say, Lucy, you did go into the final game at the weekend against Australia as the underdogs?
Yeah, hello, Marie and Ruby.
Hey,
I was listening on there. But yeah, definitely we've kind of been the underdog, I guess. It's our first time ever reaching a final, second time reaching a semi-final. But I do agree with what Ruby said. I think what we've done as a group differently this season is we've sat down and created very tangible goals and expected to reach those goals. And one of them was top four. And I do believe that actually sitting down and saying that was something that not that we just could do, but something that we were going to do was a big part of us actually doing it. What we didn't actually write down, funny enough, was reaching the finals. So we managed to overdo our goals. But yeah, definitely, I think it's the belief in knowing that we could and would do it definitely played a big part in it.
Ruby's nodding along here and smiling. He's absolutely delighted that he has been vindicated. So he will definitely thank you for that.
I've not been vindicated. I'm just, Lucy, I'm so glad to hear you talking that way. I think that is the way. I think I can't understand why we still think we're poor Ireland. We have brilliant sports people and we should be expecting them to win and go and do things. And I'm delighted to hear that. But Lucy, we're going to go back to Seville and talk about the Sevens last weekend, because it's a wonderful sport. It's high octane. It's so fast. He started with a win against Poland. Then he beat Brazil, Russia. But what about after you beat Canada, heading into the semi-final, to beat England 29-0? I mean, that was just wiping the table with it.
Yeah, it was a special moment for us, definitely. I think the nil part of it is what we came away with happiest about, to just keep a clean sheet. And you don't need motivation anyway in a semi-final, but to be up against England on a Sunday morning, it's easy to get out of bed that morning. And we went out with a very definite game plan, and that's a very talented England team. So I think the fact that we were able to stop them from scoring, and I think you'll have seen it online, an amazing chase back by Bevan Parsons in the first half was probably a big turning point. So we pride ourselves on defence, and I definitely think our defence won that game. As good as their attack was to score 29, it's rare in a sevens game that you keep a team to nil, and that was the first time and the only time actually that weekend that we did.
Right, to nil is incredible in sevens. There's so much space, so much room. The level of effort required to keep a team to nil is probably hard to put into words, but that's what really took my eye as well.
Yeah, definitely. And we've seen, and you don't have to go too far down World Rugby page to see highlights of the likes of Meg Jones on that England team, who are impressive attackers. But I think we've got a good defensive structure, but mainly it's a lot of like hard work and heart. And again, like hats off, a lot of the... It was Bevan Parsons who chased back, and then two of our younger players, Emily Lane and Aaron King, that got back and made the turnover. So, yeah, definitely. And I think when your defence is going well, that's such a big lift as a team, because it's just about being united, really, in a game of sevens. So that probably boosted us on then to actually put the score that we did.
And then to go on and go in against Australia, as I said at the top, nobody really expected you to go out and win it. But you came so close. This absolutely agonising that they got that try after the buzzer, and you put in such a brilliant performance. And you probably won't like a lot of people thinking this, Lucy, but that performance was a sports highlight for an awful lot of the country. We were getting the texts in about it on Monday, even though you didn't win. But just the fact that you're able to go out and put on a show like that and come so close, it felt like it was a bit of a moment for sevens.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of a double-edged sword, nearly. Like, on one side, I dreamt about this for years. Like, I've been playing for 8 years and sevens been my life. So getting to the final was so special, but I'm heartbroken that we didn't win it. And I never thought I'd be disappointed walking away with a silver medal after getting to sing my national anthem, but I was massively disappointed and still am. But the flip side of it is, our overarching goal to everything that we do, and it's just higher than the Olympics or World Cup or anything, is to put Sevens on the map. So just hearing this week all the people that have actually watched that game or have heard about Sevens for the first time or heard about Amy Lee Murphy-Crow or Bavin Parsons, like, all that's kind of the most important thing for us. Success is success, but to us it really is about making more girls in Ireland play rugby. So I think that's been a massive positive, and I'm definitely trying to enjoy that end of it and try and learn and grow to make sure that it's a goal the next time.
So what's different about your team this year, Lucy? Like, we have seen you over the, as you said, you're 8 years in it now, and, you know, Bavin has been around for a short enough time, but it feels like she's been around for a long time. Amy Lee Murphy-Crow has been stealing the headlines on so many occasions with her amazing amount of tries and, yeah, and the sheer quality of them. But to be getting to this, to the real business end of things, what have you done differently, and what are the changes that you have made?
Yeah, it's been definitely been building a long time. There's a lot of hard work that's went in over years with the program. But as airy fairy as it sounds, it's been a lot of off-field things. I think COVID was a time where a lot of us got time at home and got to appreciate where sport sits in our life and how important it is, but also how much we had to grow off the pitch as well. And we've done a lot of work around what a lot of people would call culture, but basically just how we interact with each other as a team and how much we care about each other off the pitch, and also what we want to stand for as players on the pitch. So I think a big part, that plays a big part. We genuinely care a lot about each other. And then, again, we sat down with goals, but goals are only one thing. I think if you care enough about the group of people that you're doing it with, then that's just the motivation that you need more than anything. Like, you spoke about the Poland game there, that came down to the wire where we were in the red and needed to score, and I think that's where things like just caring about people who you're playing with and trusting in the girls on the pitch, that plays a massive role. So as much as there's always been talent there, I think that's kind of what gelled it all together.
And there's great adventure in the Sevens tour, in the series even. I mean, two rounds in Dubai, two in Spain, one in Malaga, one in Seville. The next competition is in Canada, in Langford. It's there's motivation there. There's travel. There's chance to go and see things and be part of great competitions. And can you or do you see the women's series growing to amalgamate totally with the men's? Can you see where you're in Hong Kong, Las Vegas? Can you see them, one becoming as big as the other?
Yeah, definitely. I think pre-COVID, it was definitely making steps in that direction. I think we were going towards eight legs, where the men had 10, but we were supposed to go to Hong Kong this year. So I definitely think it's going in that direction. And I think, like, we had so many supporters there over the weekend, both for the men and the women's team, and they were just complimenting how entertaining both were. So yeah, definitely, I think especially exposure across an Olympic cycle helps. So like the Olympics this year would have helped promote the game of Sevens. But yeah, definitely, I really hope at some stage it is that every leg is back-to-back with the men's, because it just adds to the entertainment of the weekend.
We know, Lucy, as well, the IRFU have put an awful lot of resources into Sevens. But at the same time, we're seeing a lot of people, men and women, walking away from it because it's financially not the most sustainable model for players to do it for a long time. You're not going to get rich. It'll be difficult, I'd imagine, to buy a house, all that sort of stuff that eventually comes into play as you get on in the game a little bit. Do you think that there could be more and should be more done to make it a sustainable career for Irish athletes?
Yeah, it'd be great if we got to a point where it was a full-time career. A lot of us have part-time jobs or are in college. I think for me, I've been in it so long that it's actually given me extra nearly opportunity or motivation maybe to stay in college a bit longer, and went back and did extra degrees. But in the future, I really hope so. Like, when I was growing up, there was no opportunity to even be a semi-professional athlete, or I didn't even know that there was a women's rugby team when I was younger, that rugby kind of found me. So nowadays, at least people can see this opportunity in Sevens as being semi-professional. And then hopefully, our hope is in a couple of years' time, then that actually becomes a full-time viable career for people.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I love when I talk to people like you, Lucy, or the girls that headed off to Australia to play in the AFL, because as you said, those opportunities weren't there only a short time ago. So to see them and to hear the stories is brilliant, because it does show that it can be done. And as you said there, hopefully it's something that will become a fully fledged professional career in time. But if the likes of yourself and Bavin and Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe keep going viral and putting the game on the map, who knows what can happen. But for anyone that has gained interest in watching you over the last little while, where can we see you next?
Yes, so we're actually playing in Canada in Langford at the end of April on the World Series again. So we've a bit of a break now, but we'll get to play some club and have some training tournaments. But the next World Series, if you keep an eye on the World Rugby, the World Sevens page, then you'll be able to see, and hopefully we'll give some good entertainment to watch then.
And if Canada's too far away for you, they'll be in Toulouse then on the 20th and the 22nd of May. Marie, that's in France, in case you don't want to cross the Atlantic. Lucy Mulhall, thanks a million for taking our call. We're going to take a quick break.
With Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It is time to talk football, specifically transfers, as yesterday was transfer deadline day. And I'm delighted to say that Mark Langdon joins us now on the line. Mark, I know there was a lot of really big ones like Dele Alli and Donny van de Beek and all the Aubameyang saga. But the one that really caught my eye was Matty Longstaff going to Mansfield Town. And I just want to know what's gone wrong with his career that he has gone from scoring that really memorable winner for against Manchester United in his Premier League debut to now dropping down to League Two in just a couple of years.
I mean, it has been sort of a dramatic sort of fall from grace, I suppose, in many respects. I think it can just happen. Maybe just wasn't really that good in the first place and, just had a bit of a purple patch and he sort of almost, I wouldn't like to say found his level, because I think he is probably better than League Two. But, I mean, there hadn't been a huge amount of sort of consistent performances in the book. And, I mean, you could point that Mansfield are a really ambitious team in League Two, fully expect to sort of be in League One next season. Maybe he just needs to find a sort of comfortable level to regain his confidence. But, sports people lose their way at times, or maybe, you look at Dele Alli. I mean, a couple of years ago, he would not have been considered, leaving on a free transfer, albeit I know that there's, some bonuses to be paid. You would have been looking at sort of 80, 100 million for him. And, I don't think there was that much market out there really for Longstaff. And he hasn't really done much in, since that goal, really, I don't think, to suggest that probably the Premier League is the place for him, I would sort of say.
Mark, what took my eye as I scrolled through the pages of transfers this afternoon was that 90% of the players just moved on loan. Is that just clubs trying to balance books, or I couldn't get over the amount of players that just moved on loan?
Yeah, I think that this is definitely a result of COVID in many respects, because I think lower down the ladder you've always had loans, particularly at this stage of the season, because it just makes sense really to get people off the books if they're not playing, and you don't want to really be spending too much money. But I think even at the top level, the amount of loans does feel a lot more than usual, and I think that probably is a balancing of the books, in as much as that they know, for the top teams, they know that that money is going to be coming back to them. The crowds are back. It feels like a never-ending supply from the TV and media companies, and they know that that is there, but they've obviously been hit very hard in the short term, and I think that this sort of loans is a result of that. And even if someone like Kulusevski went to Spurs, there is an expectation, I think, that that becomes permanent. But it allows Tottenham a bit more time, to get the boxing in and all the other things, the NFL, that they want to do with the stadium, to just help to pay for it a little bit further down the line. I also think that if you have a look at the amount of players that are out of contract in the summer, top level ones, Ousmane Dembele, you've got Dybala, Kylian Mbappe. I think this is another example of COVID, where I think players are looking at it now and just thinking, you know, I'll wait. And clubs are saying, we'll wait and we'll take you on a free transfer and we'll give you the wages, but it's structured over a certain amount of time, and it still comes in a lot less expensive than having to pay a club, you know, 60, 70, 80 million, you know, for a player's services. So I think we are, you know, seeing the effects of COVID for sure.
Wolves seem to keep doing great business. Adam Traore gone on loan to Barcelona, but there's a 30 million buyout clause there. Will that go through eventually?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, the expectation is a bit, Barcelona are probably a prime example of a team that haven't really got the money now, but, you know, they're expecting to get more as the years go on. Yeah, I think we are expecting that one to become permanent. And Xavi, the sort of recently appointed Barcelona manager, he wants to sort of build the whole core of the team around those that play for the Spanish national side. So you saw that with Ferran Torres, who went from Manchester City, and Adama Traore, although he's not a regular for Spain, he is sort of around the squad, and he's also, you know, a Barcelona youth product. So he came through La Masia, and I think that Xavi kind of wants players with, it's a bit of an overused cliche about sort of the Barcelona DNA, but I think that that is what he's looking for. He wants to get back to, you know, players that have played and understand what it means to play for Barcelona. Dani Alves, at the kind of other end of the age scale, some of the players have been buying, another one to return. So that's what we're seeing from Xavi. Interested to see how Aubameyang gets on there. I mean, he obviously isn't somebody with that DNA and has caused problems elsewhere, but probably worth the risk, I think, from Barcelona's point of view.
And just very quickly then, from a Republic of Ireland point of view, Mark, Jeff Hendrick and Jamie McGrath both secured late moves to QPR and Wigan Athletic respectively.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, both are doing well in their divisions, and, you know, particularly if you're looking at Hendrick, I mean, you know, he hasn't played much at all, has he, for Newcastle, and, you know, a good opportunity for both of those. Both play good football, so, you know, a good opportunity for them to sort of get their careers sort of going again, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. And we will be talking to Paul Corry tomorrow about all of that. Right, Mark Langdon, thank you so much for joining us. We will be catching up with you again in the next few days. Ruby, we do have a winner. But first of all, the answer is Croke Park, for anyone that didn't know. The winner is Padraig Tighe from Leitrim. Good Leitrim name there. So Padraig has won that €50 Aldi gift card. You've no excuses now for Valentine's Day, and your name is also in the hat for Friday's draw for our trip to Paris, and there'll be more chances to enter tomorrow.
Surely be Friday, Marie. You have to ask a question that only you and I know the answer to, and, you know, we'll just get in the draw.
Well, we'll try that. Okay, Ruby, Tara Kumar is up next.